Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan and I'm thrilled to share with you all this interview I did with Karen Hewler about her latest novel, The Splendid City. I love this book so much, and I know so many people who will also devour this one. I had such a blast chatting with Karen about this book. Both of us were sitting outside during the recording, so you get to enjoy the sounds of nature in the background, particularly the chirping birds, who had a lot to say about the character of Stan, the talking cat. The Splendid City is out now, so stop in and grab a copy from Gibson's bookstore. But first, please enjoy my interview with Karen Hewler. Hi, Karen Hewler!
Hi, thank you for inviting me. It's so great to be here and to be able to talk to you.
I am so thrilled to chat with you. I love that we're both outside.
Yes, and that does mean for me there's liable to be motorcycles occasionally.
Here too, honestly. I'm at a book conference and I was like, I'm going to go sneak away and do an author interview. I'll be right back.
I have terrible Wi-Fi. I operate off a hotspot because I'm in very rural New Jersey, and I have terrible Wi-Fi. So I'm in a park in the nearest town, and what happens, happens.
Hey, we're on very similar spots here. I love it. Yeah, it's funny. I'm at this book conference, and I was just chatting with Paul Tremblay, and he was like, wait, who were you about to interview? And I told him, and he was like, oh my God, Karen, tell her I said hi.
Oh, great. It's so nice to hear that.
Yeah. So Paul Tremblay says hi. he was just telling us about his new book, The Pallbearers Club, which
is
fantastic.
Everybody is coming out with books. I guess those 2 years of isolation have finally produced a whole flock at the same time.
Yeah. I am so close to the end of The Splendid City and I don't want to do anything else. I just want to read your book.
Of course, that's what authors live to hear. So thank you.
Oh, it is so much fun. For folks who have not gotten a chance to read an advanced copy of it, could you give us a little elevator pitch for the Splendid City?
Probably going to be a long elevator ride.
That's fine.
So I'm delighted to talk about this book, The Splendid City, coming out from Angry Robot Books. And it's got two principal characters, Eleanor, who is a novice witch. The head of the New York City coven, Gloria, invites her to join. She was not aware that she was a witch. So she, as a novice initiate, she has to go through a series of lessons and tests and trials. She can now fly. She's learning her spells. She's up to the transformation spells. And one of the keys to that spell is to make sure there is a key to unlock it if needed. She works at a gift shop with Stan, who's a pushy, manipulative, sarcastic coworker who bullies her a bit and is also a bit of a stalker, although he's still sarcastic and fun. He goes too far one day, and without thinking, she turns him into a cat for reasons we'll discover in the book. And she forgets to put the key in to unlock it. So she's stuck, he's stuck being a cat, and she has to face the wrath of the coven because she's violated the rules. So the two of them are exiled to Liberty, which used to be Texas, but seceded from the Union and set up its own country. And Liberty is a really fun place. There are constant parades. There are showers of nougats being thrown down the street. There's something called the Messenger, which is a van that runs down the street, stops in front of someone and either gives them a car or a really good gift or takes them away. Supposedly when they're taken away, they go on a great vacation. So no one's bothered that they don't come back. The task that Eleanor has is to find a missing witch. And in the meantime, in Liberty, there's a water shortage. Water is metered by the hour because the Easterners have stolen a river from them. And that is also becomes part of her quest. In the meantime, Stan is really enjoying himself. He loves it there. He loves all the excitement. He loves the tacos and the beer. He loves being mistaken for a cat so he can overhear all these ridiculous conversations. He's having a blast. And then he hears about a treasure hunt. And of course, Stan believes he is the one person in the world who could possibly uncover where the treasure is. So that's a Liberty. It's constant fun if you never look below the surface. There is also a bunch of animatronic presidential heads that line the streets. And these heads are always asking passerbys, how are you? Is there anything we can do to help? Would you like to make a contribution? But also, is there anyone struggling in Liberty? We would like to reach out and help them. So it's a surveillance state underneath bread and circuses, basically. Mm-hmm. That's my point.
I love this book so much. It is so incredible. I've been trying to like put my finger on the vibe of it, because the closest I've come to is that I get kind of like a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, like a Terry Pratchett kind of vibe, because it is this like, it's fun and it's absurd and it's silly. But if you look just slightly below the surface, it is so sinister. And I love it.
That's what I was going for. So thank you. You're a good reader.
Oh, excellent. I want to talk about Stan for a minute. I sent very early on in my reading, I sent a picture of a paragraph to one of my coworkers who has cats. And it's a moment where, Stan comes home and he's like, he's been drinking beer and he like didn't pay the water bill. And so they have no water. Like, he's just been annoying. And Eleanor just puts out a box. And Stan is compelled to sit in the box and she just leaves him there all night.
He's mostly human, but he does have these cat tendencies and he can't fight them.
I laughed so hard at that. And that was a moment I was like, oh, I am vibing with this book. This is amazing. Do you have cats? He's written so perfectly.
Yes, I have had cats for ages and ages and ages, and I can't imagine life without a cat. Mm-hmm. I also have a dog who's wonderful. So both dogs and cats are great.
Yes.
I think I've had dogs in other books, but this is the first one that really relies on catness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's so perfect as a cat. Like, yes. It's just exactly like, yep. You meet him in human form and you're like, yeah, that's a cat.
No doubts. He's got the presence, you know?
Yeah.
You're there for him.
I can't help but wonder, like, has there been, and you don't have to name names, obviously, but has there ever been anyone in your life that you're like, I wish I could turn that person into an animal, a cat or a snake or anything?
No, actually, Stan is, there's a book called The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov, which I have to say, this book is a nod to that book. There's a cat, The Devil Comes to Moscow. In the 1920s or 30s, I think. The Devil Comes to Moscow. He's got a cat associate as well as a few others, but the cat is named Behemoth. He walks around on back legs and he's very sarcastic. I've loved that book forever. And I particularly loved the magic, because there's also a wish in there. So there's a lot of things that are an homage to that book. Stan, I think, might be an homage to him, but he's also a little bit the secret voice I have, you know, when don't say it, Karen, don't say it, but think it, you know, because Stan has, he's got no filter.
No, none.
No filter at all. And certainly there are times when I wish I could get away with it, but I know better, I hope, most of the time. So Stan is a little bit of me, a little bit of Behemoth from The Master and Margarita. And then he just sort of blossomed all on his own. You know, we keep hearing this thing about characters running away with the book. And I think what they mean is it's so much fun writing this character that you don't want to stop. Because you can get away with it. And I love Snork. I love being able to say things that are almost true and are absurd at the same time. And he does that constantly. And it's just, it's a delight to watch him.
Yeah, he's incredible. I was going to ask if he or Eleanor was more fun to write, because they're both amazing characters.
Well, I consider myself too impatient and too often going in the wrong direction. So Eleanor is a little bit of me recognizing I have faults and there are consequences to my faults because Eleanor has to learn to conquer her impatience and to think things through before actually doing things, especially something as big as a spell. So I do see myself in her. And one of the things I love about it is she is an isolated person up until the witches discover her. And then she joins a community. And I feel when I reread those parts, I feel good because I do feel I'm part of a community with the witches. And I love that aspect of it. Mm. It took a long time for me to find my literary community. And when I did, it was, you know, yes, of course, I'm no longer alone, that kind of thing. But also, these are interesting people doing interesting things. Mm-hmm. And we can talk to each other about the interesting things and the lessons we've learned. So yeah. To an extent, I suppose if I push this far enough, it does almost reflect the literary community in The Master and Margarita, except they're terrible. They're horrible. And this community is wonderful. And I would, mm-hmm. you know, I like the feeling I get when I read those passages.
I love that.
Yeah. Love yeah that. So both characters have a little bit of me in them. Mm-hmm. And I'm sort of observing the snark that I have a tendency to and the impatience that sometimes gets me in hot water.
Yeah, Eleanor is pretty relatable. I am also very stubborn and often rash. And yeah. So I was like, I get it. If I had the power to turn someone into a cat, I might.
Quite a few people, I think, and it wouldn't always be a cat. I'm thinking frogs would be fun.
Oh, frogs would be fun.
Reverse that whole fairy tale.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Maybe like a rat, like just a... yeah. That's so fun. So... Stan, to bounce back to him for a second, he's an internet troll, as a human and as a cat. Yeah. and which is so fitting for him, and he fits in so well in Liberty as a stirrer upper of controversy and conspiracy theories, which is hilarious. And I was curious what your personal thoughts are on like social media and internet trolls and how that translated into this book.
I don't really pay attention to trolls. There was a period last week, I think it was, when Roe v. Wade was looking like going to be overturned. When I started reading comments, mm-hmm. and articles, mm-hmm. I knew better than that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't do that. There are a bunch of idiots out there. You know, number one, don't engage. I have learned that. Mm-hmm. But number two, don't read it. There's nothing you can do about it. You're not going to change their minds. And it actually represents a portion of the populace that happens to be accurate. I mean, it's true. So what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. I'm on Facebook a lot. I'm always checking things. I like the sense, number one, of being able to find out anything I'm curious about. I mm-hmm. love that so much. And I very much like Facebook because it does, again, give me a sense of community. I get to see what my writer friends are doing. Yay.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. So number one, stay away from trolls.
Yeah.
Number two, the internet is good.
Yeah.
You know, I love it.
I love that. Yeah, I have a community of my fellow mom friends. We all had babies around the same time. And that's the only reason I go on Facebook is to interact with them, because I'm like, it's like a nice little happy pocket of the internet.
Yes. And if the internet can offer support.
Yes.
You know, that's certainly not bad. And that's one of, I think, the main boosts about it for me is, again, right now I'm out in the country in a forest, which is wonderful. But none of my writer friends are around. So when I go back to the city, the first thing I do is check in, let's get together. Yeah. Because that community makes your life so much better and gives you so much more strength to keep going on difficult days. It's wonderful. Mm. And as a mom, I know you have difficult days.
Yes. thinking of community and the coven that Eleanor joins, I love the when she's at one of the early meetings and they're kind of talking to her about sort of like the rules and the beliefs of the coven, and they go to the bonfire on the full moon, and she has this wonderful experience. And I'm curious how much of the kind of core values of her coven, how much is that based on like real Wiccan and witchcraft things, and how much of that is just you?
No, I did hit the internet. Again, the internet is such a fabulous tool. It's amazing. I hit the internet. I won't say I did deep research. Mm-hmm. I did enough research to get a feel for what the basis of witchcraft is, mm-hmm. and what their belief system is. So I did enough to feel comfortable that I wasn't going to offend anyone who was a witch. And I know I should be saying Wiccan instead of witch, forgive me. So I feel that I think I represented it well enough to get by.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's all very kind of positive, and like the way they're outlining it is I was like, yeah. Oh, that's lovely. No, that's amazing. To sort of pull off of something that I said early on, you know, this book is Liberty is this like absurd, sort of silly, somewhat celebratory, and yet also sinister place. How difficult was that balance of having this like kind of eerily similar to our own world, but like a little bit worse, but also like making it funny? How hard was it to strike that balance?
It was amazingly easy, actually. The thing, I love absurdity. And the thing about the absurd and satire is you take something and you push it. Mm-hmm. You just keep pushing until something funny happens. Since I'm not writing a tragedy, I'm going in that direction. So you can look at the things that strike you and take them as far as you possibly can when they're still usable. Mm-hmm. It was very easy in this case because I was going on the basic assumption of red and circuses. You just keep everybody entertained and they won't ask questions.
Yeah.
And so entertainment, easy, parades, nougat showers, the messenger vans, and the heads along the street is actually a reference to Philip K. Dick, whom I love. I forget what year it was, in the 90s maybe, somebody built an animatronic Philip K. Dick. And while they were transporting him, his head somehow managed to get separated from the body of the robot. And the head has never been found.
Oh my God.
This fascinates me. The idea that there's an animatronic, a missing animatronic Philip K. Dick head is just wonderful. And I think that's how that popped into the story, because there are lots of references to other things in the book. And I finally found a use for the missing Philip K. Dick heads, you know, great.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Yeah, when I got to the first mention of the animatronic heads, I was like, oh, I love this. Just like the president's head just like throughout. And Eleanor's like, okay, but why though? And everyone's like, because he loves us. It's like, he wants to make sure we're okay. And she's like, okay, I'm from New York. This is weird. incredible. I cannot recommend this book highly enough. I am so excited for this to come out so I can hand sell it to people, because it is fun and oh gosh, it's a fun read, but it's also like a really interesting look at our own world. And oh gosh, I love it. I love it so much. I know that you are very prolific with both long form and short stories. Is there anything you're working on next? Or are you just kind of focused on this, or do you have something?
No. I just sent off a new novel to my agent. I have a story coming out next year in Asimov's. I have a literary collection coming out in August, and a sci-fi fantasy collection coming out in November. And it sounds like amazing, but basically there's been a couple of years hiatus between the last book and this one. Mm-hmm. And my agent has been terrific in managing to place things. So it's not all my work, it's her work. I do the writing, and if she can find a place for it, it's just terrific. And as it happens, I had a backlog of things that I hadn't been able to place. And she managed the book and the science fiction collection, the literary collection I managed. But I'm not as fast a writer as it may appear.
That's valid. That's fair. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, best of luck on all of that. That's fantastic. Before we wrap up, is there anything you've read recently that you want to shout out and recommend?
I have recently discovered Brian Evanson. I love Jeffrey Ford, and I'm mentioning them because the two of them in my head are kind of tied together with literary horror kind of thing. They're very, very interesting to me. And Brian Evanson he pushes things farther than I do, and he gets away with it. I mean, there are things that I look at it and I say, I can't believe any of this, but I'm so invested, I can't stop. he's wonderful. He's a wonderful discovery for me. So I'm very happy about that.
Wonderful. That's very exciting. We have a brand new, like as of like a couple weeks ago, we have a brand new horror section in our bookstore, which was entirely me just making one and then just waiting to see if my bosses would notice.
Good. So somehow or other, and I think I know how it happened. I was a literary writer for a long time, but a lot of my stories kept pushing at the edge of reality, magical realism mostly, until I finally made the leap. And one of the early things that happened was I was nominated for a Shirley Jackson Award. And that was how I met an awful lot of horror writers. Though I'm not primarily a horror writer, I do edge into there a lot more often than I think I do. But that's how I now know Paul Tremblay and Jeff Ford, Brian Evanson, a lot of people, and they happen to be more horror than I am, which is an interesting position to be in. It's like, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm too scared. I got to put it down.
I got to leave all the lights on for this one. Yeah. But I mean, talking about community and writing communities, and I too have just in the process of kind of building this horror section of the store have made so many horror author friends, and that's another phenomenal community of folks. So.
Oh, they're very good. They're very good. Yeah. Certainly in the Northeast, up in the Boston area, there's a huge clump of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So many.
Yes. Yes.
New England does breed a lot of horror.
I can imagine those long dark nights. Yeah. Those old houses. Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. Well, Karen, I am so thrilled for the Splendid City. I can't wait for this one to come out. I have so many customers that I know are going to love this, and I can't wait to shove it into their hands because, it is fun, and it just, I love it so much.
Okay. I have a final word to say.
Yes, please.
Save the world, vote smart, and don't listen to talking cats.
Perfect. Incredible.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Huge thanks again to Karen Hewler for joining me on the podcast. The Splendid City is available now at Gibson's Bookstore. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!